I got bribed to go into youth ministry. My dad said he'd give me a car.
He started just a minute ago, but he hasn't said anything good yet.
Except for that many comments about how you cut into my time. Anyway, it was one of those things where I was looking at going into to be an attorney is what I thought I would do. I wanted to go to Baylor and thought from there I wanted to do constitutional law. And my dad said if I do a year of Bible college, he'd give me a car. And so, man, here we are. This many years later. Crazy journey. I'll tell this part of the story and I'll hurry because I don't want to go past my time because I get way too much content. But it is funny. My first ministry, I was a freshman in college. Like, I'm 19 years old at this point. You know, it's coming into the spring. Just turned 19. You know, finished wrapping my freshman year, and they've got all these things where they make all these announcements about, you know, this church is looking for somebody to come do, you know, ministry for the summer. And I'm like, dude, want to do that? You know, forget that. I got no interest. And one of the guys are like, hey, man, you gonna try for that church? I'm like, nope. Why would anyone want to do youth ministry at a church? You know, we'd want to mess with that. And they're like, you don't want to do it. I was like, no, you're right. I don't want to do it. Like, well, you're afraid you wouldn't get the job. I was like, well, no, I get the job. It's like, I get the job, you know. And then the guys in this room understand when ego takes over. It starts, you know, the bantering back and forth. And I'm like, all right, boys, we'll put my mouth up against your mouth any day. Yeah. We'll see who wins. So we go through it, man. I remember sitting down with this group of elders. They're doing this interview. I'm 19 years old looking across, you know. And, you know, at that point, I'm trying to seal the deal. And they did this used car salesman thing that I'm sure you've seen elders do before. Well, young man, if we offer you this job right now, would you take it? Everything in my heart saying, no, not a chance, man, no way. Yes, I would. Like, no. So next thing you know, it's probably 2 or 3 weeks later, I get a phone call. And they're like, yeah, this is, so-and-so, we're the elder, a little church in Oklahoma. Like, we're the eldership of this church in Oklahoma. We just want to let you know you get the job. I'm like, oh, crud. I got the job. It's like, it's kind of like I beat everybody. It was a little tense moment. So, I was disappointed that I got it, but pumped I beat the other guys. I remember going up to the dorm room, walking, and I'm like, what's up, fellas? I mean, it had been 2 weeks now. 2 weeks in college world, as everybody's forgotten. Walk in there, and they're like, hey, man, what's going on? I was like, not much, man. Just got a phone call. I'm like, okay, great. I got the job. And they're like, what? What are you talking about? I was like, I got the job, guys. There's all the guys bantering with me. I was like, what do you mean? Like, what are you talking about? I was like, that church, man. They're like, what? I go, that church, man, remember? In the top of the chapel. I got the job. And all of a sudden, I kid you not, every guy in the room, like six guys, hit the floor laughing. Laughing. I mean hysterically laughing. Can't even move. And at that point, I'm starting to like, shut up, quit laughing. I'm starting to get a little mad at him. I'm like, what's so funny, man? Everybody keeps cracking up here. This isn't funny anymore. Finally, one of them got their composure enough. This is like 2 minutes of solid laughter. They can't even breathe, snot a whole bit. When they look at it, they go, you're the only one that went to the interview. True story. True story, man. And so here I am, you know, honestly coming up on a lot more than 15 years, 20 plus years of doing student ministry. I still remember my very first Sunday in this little church. It was a small church. I was supposed to do an internship. Youth Minister Bales, it's just me. It's my first Sunday. I've got, you know, kindergarten all the way through college, and I'm 19 years old doing, you know, morning church with about 30 little kids that are, you know, under the age of fourth grade, and I'm like, what do I do? And I remember I got this knock on the door, and an elder, you know, showed up. He goes, hey, they need you in the sanctuary right now. My first Sunday. It's like, what? Why? What did I do? It's like, I just got here. My first Sunday, goes, you got to baptize two kids. Like, but I don't know how to do that. Like, what do you mean? He just looked at me. He's better figure it out, boy. Slap me in the back. And I walk in. I'm trying to. I put on waders. And I'm walking down. Like, how do I do this? You know. And it has been an amazing journey. It really has been. And I feel like I continue to learn. And I love students. I know we're all in here adults. And lots of opportunities to go preach, lots of opportunities to go lead large churches, medium-sized churches, all kinds of things. But honestly, I just don't want to because, I mean, I'm one of you now. I'm a dad with four kids, a mortgage, and a minivan. Like, I get it. And we're a mess, man. We got, you know, all of our own issues. Our peers have all their own issues. And trying to raise up, you know, world changers is hard when they're saddled with mortgages and debt. Yeah. And I'm looking at it going, most of the problems that you all have, you know, and that your peers have. They made their own mess. You know, kids, I still see them as wet cement, and we get time to change them and transform them. So you can have the adults. They're a mess. Give me the kids, man. Give me the students. Amen. Let me change the world. Adults are too stuck in their ways. Adults are too stuck in their jobs. And when you give me a kid, I feel like we can turn the world upside down. And so, honestly, if you look at my arms, I got goosebumps around it right now. Like, I've got no desire to, right now in my life, to go preach or work with adults. I want to work with students. And I love that text. And I push our staff on this all the time. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the text. So we're going to spend a lot of time doing something that's out of my wheelhouse. I'd much rather teach Bible. We're going to talk a little sociology today. But, you know, in 1 Chronicles chapter 12, when David starts listening to his mighty men, I love watching the pens go down. He's doing Bible now. No exegesis in here today. We're doing way more sociology. He talks about a couple of different groups. One, he talks about these guys from Benjamin that could wield a sword with either hand. I always tell my staff all the time, you better be able to know how to handle a sword in both hands. That you've got to be able to talk theology with this hand, but also be able to talk anything from business sociology with the other. You got to live in both worlds. You can't afford in this day and age in pastoral ministry to be a person who all you can do is exegete. You've got to be able to exegete and. And so I tell my staff, you got to be able to wield a sword with both hands. The other thing that David surrounds him with is men from Issachar. Remember what he says about them? Remember what he says about those guys? So men that understood the times that could lead Israel in the right way to go. Understood the times. And it's complex. Let me just start with sociology. And listen, if you're older, give me a little bit of grace in what I'm about to say, because I don't want to lose you in the first few minutes. I truly think that right now might be the hardest time to preach and teach. I'll go large. At least within the American church, in the history of the American church, might be the toughest time it's ever been. And the reason why it might surprise you, it's not because there's more idolatry, there's always been idolatry. It's not because there's more materialism, there's always been materialism. It's because for the first time in history, we are now having to stand up and communicate to five generations at once. That's never happened at church before. You see a preacher go up on a stage, or you even stand up a lot of times in front of your students, and you think about all the adult leaders you've got, and parents, and volunteers, and college kids, and the students you're standing in front of in that room at any given time, you get five generations. You know, we're seeing people live longer than they ever have in history, and because of that, it's truly causing a complex nature in terms of how we approach church. We'll get to Generation Z, but how many guys were in the Bob Goff conversation today? Okay, Bob, fantastic. Heard him a ton of times, and honestly, I can hear this Bob tell the same illustration 20 times, 11 every time. It's fantastic. But one of the things that Bob talked about was that he's a product of where he comes from. I can't remember exactly how he worded that. Anybody here remember that? How do you phrase that?
Your reaction to...
Yeah, your reaction to how you're...
reaction
to a reflection of. You know, I can tell you how true that is in my own world. I love people that are broken and rough around the edges, because that's my story. It's what I come from, broken and rough around the edges. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. And so, man, I see potential in kids like that. When I look at the church, a lot of times one of the things we forget is that you're looking at five generations sitting in your pews, and for some of you, five generations even sitting in your room when you're talking to students. You get traditionalists in there, okay? You know, one of the greatest generations, they would call themselves. You've got boomers in there. We're not going to go through birth dates and all that kind of stuff. You've all heard the terminology. You've got boomers sitting in there. You know, in this room, we have traditionalists, because I'm surveying the room. We have boomers in this room. We've got Xers in this room. Come on now, Xers. Here we go. Woo-woo. We've got Xers in this room. I've got millennials in this room. I don't think I've got any Z, actually. No Generation Z. Yeah, we do. Generation Z. What's your birthday? What year are you born?
99.
Okay, yeah. Generation Z in the room. Fantastic. We got five generations sitting in this room right now. And here's the deal. Anytime, whether it's student ministry or adult ministry, anytime you've got five generations sitting in a room, they all come with their own agendas. They all come with their own perspectives. They all come with their own leadership. They all come with their own desires. They all come with their own set of things that they bring to the table that they want to be met. They want to be fulfilled. So you try to build a church. I don't care if it's picking out carpet, picking out songs you're going to sing, picking out preaching styles, picking up how parking lots are going to be handled. You bring in five generations, how they're going to handle technology, and try to address all those things. In one setting, it is a complicated time right now. Complicated. Complicated. We're reaction at some level or response to where we come from. Now, before we get to Z, and I want to talk about millennials and Z, because there's a lot of blurring between these generations. You can find some more distinctions between traditionalists and boomers. There's definite distinctions between boomers and Xers. Big distinctions there. Xers, big distinction in them are millennials. Millennials and Z, they blend some. There's a bit of a hybridization happening with that, with those right there. Let's talk about that. Well, part of where we come from. You know, for me, I come from a mom that's got, you know, it's her third marriage. Lots of living boyfriends. Lots of things happened in my world growing up. Never heard my biological father say the words, "I love you," until my wedding day. Just stuff like that. And so, you know, I look at it going, the first time I ever heard an adult man say the words, "I love you," I just graduated from college. My stepdad said it before I moved to California. Where project we come from. Not a day goes by that I don't tell my kids I love them. Every day. Probably too much. I know you can tell them ever too much. Like, "Dad, I know you love me." But I look at it sometimes. If we go all the way back, we think about our churches. I want you to see why millennials and Z are the way they are. But let's back up and let's just do a quick survey of history, okay? We won't spend a lot of time doing this, but a brief amount of time because I think it's important. Traditionalists, we understand what's going on. Give me things that happened during that generation. Big issues. You got Great Depression. What else you got? You got world wars. What else? What's their primary mode of communication? Even before the TV.
Radio.
Radio, Pony Express. You're going to get throat punched by a traditionalist. Yeah. But you're looking at it, there's a lot of things that generation brings. And honestly, one of the most sacrificial generations in our history. I mean, they are willing to give it all. For the greater good. Willing to give it all for the cause in front of them. Some of us grew up in homes where we watch our traditionalist grandparents save. They were thrifty. They grew their own food. You know, I mean, they could do it all. They could cook everything from scratch. They grew their own food. They killed their own cows, a whole bit. I mean, they could just do it all. And honestly, you know, it was that waste not want not type idea. You know, it was keep calm, carry on. It was all those mentalities. And what traditionalists grew up saying is, we're going to build a different world for our children. And back then, if you think about it, it's a totally agrarian society. Kids had a purpose. They worked on the farm with mom and dad. This will all apply to millennials and Z here in a second. Just go on the journey with me. There's a purpose to it all. Traditionalists had a purpose. The kids had a purpose on the farm. Kids had a purpose in the home. And all of a sudden, they grew up and said, "We're going to build a better world than what we have. And our kids, they're not going to go through what we went through. We're going to make it different for our kids." And so they raised a generation of boomers. You know, families come home from war and everywhere else, and man, do they produce like rabbits. Holy smokes, they have a lot of kids. Good grief, that's what we call boomers. They're producing kids like crazy, left and right, and this massive generation comes out of it, and there's a shift. Because boomers were the first, and this is important in light of millennials and Z, they were the first wanted generation in history. Traditionalists were needed. Do you see the difference? Boomers were wanted. Now I want you to think about it. We get to helicopter parents here in just a little bit. Hang tight. We'll get there. You're either response or reaction where you come from, just like Bob Goff said. You've got these boomers in the first generation that's truly wanted. And they're told from the very beginning that you can be anything you want to be. Be anything. So the first time in history, we sent a generation of people, not off to war, although we did Vietnam, I don't want to miss that, but what we really do is we sent a generation of kids off to college. That's a new concept in American ideology. New concept. All of a sudden, we're building universities like crazy. You think about the universities, you look on a lot of college campuses, the amount of, you know, dorms, the amount of all that kind of stuff that's built in that time frame of the late 60s, 70s. Colleges are absolutely exploding because this big generation wanted to find their way, whereas traditionalists were all about self-sacrifice, boomers were all about self-indulgence. They were very individualistic, hyper-individualistic. Now, wait a second, because that's going to apply to our millennials and our Generation Z. Okay? Physics says for every reaction, what is it?
Equal and opposite reaction.
Equal and opposite reaction. So you go from a hyper-individualistic group, you're going to have an opposite reaction. Equal and opposite. And you're going to find communal stuff coming up. You're going to find community being more important. We'll get to that here in a second. Let's just back up because it's important to lay the groundwork. Boomers come in, very individualistic. All of a sudden, they're leaving the farm, and the city centers begin to grow. Suburbia begins to explode. Remember all this stuff that happens? You think about your community and the amount of houses that got built in the 70s. Think about all these subdivisions. You look around like, all of a sudden, houses are getting built. They all look kind of alike. This whole new mentality is being built. Just things coming out. Malls are getting constructed. Crazy time frame by this massive generation, and really, boomers are highly effective and they're highly competitive. Because you know what? They had to compete to win, man. There's a lot of them. They're competing at the college level. They're competing in the workforce, and they're going at it head to head, man. And they are an aggressive, go get them, let's knock them dead society. Boomers get things done. They get it done, man. They get it done big time. And then we introduce a new generation. New generation comes on called Generation X. And there's a pendulum swing. Because all of a sudden, if I use the word dink, anybody know what that means? Term he used for Xers are going to know what it means. What does it mean?
Dual income,
no kids. That was a phrase that was said among that boomer generation. They're hyper-individualistic. They're going to build wealth. They're going to build their homes. They're going to build their careers. You have all this thing that's happening at this individualist level. And then all of a sudden, for the first time in American history, you see the divorce rate begin to skyrocket among boomers. Skyrocketing divorce rate. Why does that matter? Because Xers are paying the price. They're watching mom and dad. They're watching marriages crumble. They look at grandparent traditionalists who are all about self-sacrifice and never separate. You know, no matter how bad it gets in a marriage, for the most part, traditionalists stuck it out. And all of a sudden, this hyper-individualistic culture shows up. And then, boom, we get divorce rates skyrocketing. And so all of a sudden, it's not just dual income, no kids. Now it's divorce left and right. And I said this phrase to my son the other day. I said, hey, Justin, he's 20 years old. You ever heard of the phrase latchkey? He's like, no. What in the world is that? I go, you never heard of a latchkey kid? He's like, I got no clue. Who here has no idea what a latchkey is? Interesting. Okay. Interesting. No idea what it is? Okay. How many of you are like, I know exactly what a latchkey kid is? Yeah. Part of the problem is, we'll get there. Part of the problem is, as boomers begin to divorce, as boomers are working two jobs, as mom and dads are both trying to make it, all of a sudden you get this whole generation of kids that are going home after school, they're unlocking the door, latchkey, and they're basically walking home from school, walking on the bus, and they are raised by, and I want to break out in a Dire Straits song, I want my MTV, but I won't, but a generation of kids are raised on MTV. Now, I can remember going back from me as a kid when there were four channels on television, and they all shut off at about midnight. Yeah. And then they come on about 5 a.m. with a farm report, okay? Like, I get it. Some of you are like, yeah, I remember those days. To tell a millennial there was a time where there were only four channels and they shut off at like midnight or 1 a.m., we're like, what? But let's walk backwards real quick because it's important, and we'll get to millennials and Z about why it matters in just a second. For traditionalists, it was all about the radio. It was one voice that they would listen to, and that voice was an expert. Okay? Divergence. Boomers becomes about TV. Now we've got four channels. And I could break out in one of about 10 different songs right now from popular shows, and you guys could sing them right now. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a theme song of Gilligan's Island or Facts of Life, I don't know what it is. You could probably sing it because that's all it was on TV. Fragment to Xers. Cable gets introduced. It's not just the fragmentation of technology. It's just how we receive, how we evaluate, and how we accept information has changed drastically. Now you move into millennials. Poo! They don't watch much TV. They just watch Netflix. They're watching more than anyone else, but they don't care about the big four, you know, networks. It doesn't matter to them. They're not paying attention to ABC, CBS, NBC. They don't care about Fox News or CNN. They're going to get their news that fast in a soundbite and probably off YouTube. That's how they're going to get it. Let's go back to Xers. Xers grew up in a time that's very difficult. And a lot of times boomers are like, oh, you big whiners, you know, you guys all listen to grunge and complain all the time. But if you understand Xers and what they're going through, and again, it applies to Z, physics reaction, Xers grew up in a difficult time. Because we built these massive institutions for colleges, and if you understand, boomers didn't have a ton of kids at that point. You got a much smaller population mass. Generation X is one of the smallest populations, okay? Really small, not huge. But did they all of a sudden begin shutting down dormitories? Did colleges do that?
No.
They shut any dormitories down. Did all of a sudden they cut faculty?
No.
They didn't do that. And once we got this housing market going, it just kept churning out more and more houses. And so you had boomers that would buy a house for, I bought my house for $30,000. You know, why can't you kids buy one? Because that same house is now $350,000. That's why. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the price of education for an Xer. You're looking at, you get an economic downturn that happens in that generation. You know, you get all kinds of crisis happening left and right with that generation. They're watching things like 9/11 and everything else. You know, you've got wars happening. There's fragmentation. There's no more respect for political leaders because they're watching their political leaders begin to crumble both socially, you know, and morally. And all of a sudden, Xers come off as a cynical generation. They're saying, man, my parents divorced. My country failed me. I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. How in the world am I supposed to make it? And so then they produce a generation called millennials. Totally different generation. Unique. Fascinating. One of the most, one of those positive generations in history, only to be trumped by Generation Z, which we'll get to in a second. First thing I tell you to understand them, they're positive, man. They see a great world ahead of them, especially millennials, even more than Z. I flipped that. They see a great world ahead of them. They see great opportunity. They believe in our future. They believe in their future. They truly believe they can do a ton of things. So what ends up happening is that you go back in a very short period of time, Xers have a reaction. My mom and dad weren't ever there. I was a latchkey kid, and so they do a pendulum swing, like Bob Goff talked about, and they are hyper-involved in their kids' lives. They go to everything. You know, for the first time, a new traditionalist would hear that a dad, you were inside when your wife was having a baby and you videotaped it? Are you kidding me? Even at some level, if you ask a lot of boomer fathers, they'll say, well, I was at the hospital. You know, I was having a cup of coffee. You know, I was there, but I didn't go into the room. That's kind of weird. People didn't do that back then. If you look at Generation X and millennials, man, they were there. They were trying to basically, can I cut the cord? Can I deliver? You know, the whole bit. Should we save the placenta? I mean, the whole gamut. I mean, they're like involved. You find this reaction of boomer parents who really weren't nearly as attached to now X or millennial parents that are, we call them helicopter parents. They're hyper involved. So how does all of this, let's start bringing it into how it impacts the church. If you were to look at millennials right now, Generation Z, they have no concept of a world without dial-up. Remember that sound? They don't know what that is. Never heard that in their lives. Some other things I tell you, as a church, we have got to wrap our heads around technology. We have to wrap our heads around this. Did a survey of millennials and Generation Z. They would rather give up their sense of smell than technology. They would rather submit one of their senses than give up their cell phone. Average amount of time, now listen, you're going to need to track with this, the average amount of time that a millennial and Generation Z, and it's actually higher with Z, millennials spend on average 7.5 hours a day on technology. Okay? Now I want you to think about how long you have millennials for you to teach. You think, well, man, I've only got them for 30 minutes on Sunday. And therein lies the first problem. Not utilizing technology in redemptive fashion. Generation Z, we use technology over 10 hours a day. And so you're like, that's not possible. Therein lies the understanding of technology. Let me explain to you my 13-year-old daughter. She is a Jesus-loving, God-centered girl. Walks with the Father. She embodies love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, and self-control. I've got a 13-year-old daughter, and I love... Honestly, my teenagers have been fantastic. I've loved their teen years. It's been a great, great run. I'm going to miss it when it's over. But I got a 13-year-old daughter right now, and she's just wonderful. I just love her. But she comes home, and you know, she talks to us, interacts, we chit-chat. She is a talker, and then some. But it's interesting, you go to her room, if she wants her alone time, what she'll do is, it's not uncommon, she has a Chromebook that she bought with her own money. You know, she has, you know, she's saved up, she's got a little job, she works, she does babysitting, she saved all of her money, bought a Chromebook, and on a side note, she also bought a compound bow, which I'm very proud of as a dad. I'm going to go down that road right now, but I love that. She'll have her Chromebook setting out, where she's probably looking up something on, you know, that's how they do all their school homework now. Everything's through the Chromebook. They're doing all of it through Google Chrome. So she's got that up in order to do her homework and check on that. And then she's got a little Kindle over here that her grandma got her, that she'll be listening to Amazon Music, you know, one of her favorite artists, something like that. And then she'll have her phone out over here, and, you know, or she'll have that usually listen to music. She'll have one of the, another, like she's got an iPad that she got a couple Christmases ago, and on one of those she'll have Skype where she's talking to her friend that she just left like 2 hours ago, and they've got, she's pulled up on Skype interacting and talking, and then she's got another one, they're like looking at YouTube videos and watching them at the same time. Now think about that.
Wow.
She's got a phone out where she might be texting. She's got an Amazon, she's got a Kindle, and she's got an iPad out, where she's interacting in two different planes. Over here, she's got her MacBook, you know, her Chromebook out. That is the way. They don't, like, a lot of times, some of us, we still reference this as a tool. One of the first things I would tell you, you've got to understand about millennial Generation Z, is this is not a tool to them. This is not a tool. And for some of you guys, like, well, you know, I'm taking a leave with my cell phone. Mm-mm. This is actually an extension of their persona. It's an extension of who they are. That their digital presence is a representation of them. In the same way, the way you fix your hair and the clothes you choose and the way your voice sounds and the music you listen to, the way that you embody who you are. You use all kinds of things to do that. Some of you use makeup, you use glasses, you use all kinds of things. The clothes you wear, they will use this as a representation of their being. The first thing I tell you, the church, you need to realize that this isn't a tool. It's not a tool. It's a representation of who they are. And it's never going away. I deal with youth pastors all the time saying, we're going to take their phones away from them. I'm like, you're missing it, man. They need to get these phones out of their hands. I get the old school way of where you're coming from. I understand it. And do I see value in silence? Yes, I do. But how many times as a church have we had these reactions of get rid of, and it's never really worked for us? I think we need to watch these reactions and focus on redemption. How do we have redemptive conversations? And there's no doubt this technology is deadly and poisonous and destructive, and it's not going anywhere. It's not. It's not going away. It'll become more and more and more embedded in this generation. So I would say, how are you utilizing technology to communicate with people? If you're going to reach millennials and Z, that's going to be critical. All right, I haven't got to my notes yet. Wow, Jeff, I'm busted. So, okay, let me skip through some stuff here because I took too long just setting everything up. Let's go through some things. Some things I would tell you if you want to reach millennials and Z in your church. Let's fire through these. Number one, I would say become the older friend. Interesting thing about both millennials and Z is they dig gray hair. They love it. They do, man. They like old people. They think it's awesome. Now, here's the deal. Boomers, you guys called them the old man. Okay? And a little bit of that attitude got passed down to Xers, where sometimes our attitude towards old people is, take it or leave it. But then something happened. Every action, an equal and opposite reaction. You had boomers and Xers that didn't have high regard for our aging adults. Didn't really listen to them. Millennials think they're fascinating. Generation Z thinks they're fascinating. And if you do student ministry and you don't have gray hair in your ministry, you're missing it, man. You're missing it. If you don't have older adults serving in your ministry, you are out of touch with millennials and Z. They will sit down and talk to a grandma or a grandpa all day long, and they will never look at them like, who's that old person? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of insecurities on behalf of boomers. A lot of insecurity on behalf of Xers, like, well, man, I'm too old for this. No, please don't. Millennials and Generation Z have the best relationship with parents that Barna and Gallup have ever tracked. They love their parents. They like their parents. There was a bit of us, for those of us that are Xers, and for you guys that are boomers, we didn't want to be seen with our parents. We didn't always want to hang out with them. Millennials are like, I love my mom. My dad's awesome. They like him. I mean, even in the midst of divorced parents and all, and I'm not saying that's a general statement. I'm not saying every family is like that. But generally speaking, there's a positive attitude towards family. Watch a lot of the shows that are on TV right now and the way parents are depicted. Good shows are not depicting them like, you know, if you go back, you know, into Archie Bunker type land, go back into some of the old shows that we watch and how parents are always like out of touch. They're all idiots. They don't know what's going on. That's not how they're depicted today. They're depicted as smart and savvy. They're able to connect. It's because they realize that when it reaches a generation, they like their parents. Okay? And they like their grandparents. For a lot of these kids, they're going to grow up knowing three generations of their family. That wasn't like it for my grandparents. Wasn't like it. So I would tell you, number one, become the older friend in their life and get older people involved. I'll talk about that. Second thing I would say is use humor. Big time importance. For me growing up, the currency of communication was music. We could go through here and debate which era had the greatest music. I'll just say that the 80s had it pretty awesome. We had good music, man. And I'll say, for some of you guys who listen to music in the 70s, tip of the hat. Those of you that listen to music in the 90s, your generation owes you an apology. That was an absolute fiasco of music. Just bad. Bad. 60s, tip of the hat. 50s, yes. That's all right. Okay, anyway. So we grew up, most of this room, we grew up talking about the bands we listened to. Right now, there's such a fragmentation that common artists are out. I can mention common artists, you know, from Bon Jovi to whoever it was that we listened to when we were kids. You know, for some of you guys grew up in the 70s, we can talk about the Eagles or Boston. You can talk about the 80s with Foreigner and all these different groups that you listen to. And we all cranked our car stereos up. You know, we had our bass going. It's a different world now. Jeff, no, it wasn't Jeff. Someone was giving it the... Kurt, you and I talk about that. What's the average listening span on like a Spotify or Pandora on a song? 24 seconds. See, I remember when I was a kid, we would wait for our favorite song to come on. And wait, and wait. You remember listening to Top 20, Top 40 Countdown? You know, waiting to see somebody like, you know, Casey. You remember those days? Yeah. That doesn't happen anymore. Yeah. It doesn't happen. Now everything moves at the speed of light. And so what does that tell you? If you want to understand their currency, our currency for most of us in this room was music. Their currency is humor. You want to have, they don't spend their time talking about all the songs that they're all listening to and their favorite artists. They spend their time sitting around talking, did you see that on YouTube? Mm-hmm. That is the currency, man. And especially humor on YouTube. The more you can evolve, and I'm not saying you have to use YouTube in every sermon, that's not what I'm getting at, but the more you can use the currency of humor to connect with this crowd, they'll love you. They love wit, they love humor. And all styles, shapes, and forms. They are collectors of humor. And they can tell you right now, a millennial or you know Generation Z in this room could probably list off about 5 funny YouTube videos you'd never heard of that you would go, why is that funny? My daughter and son do that all the time with me. They always blast me like, Dad, you got to see this. That is a reoccurring phrase in our home. Instead of we would have said, hey, have you heard this? They'll say, you have to watch this. You have to see this. It's moved from eyes to ears. It's an important transition. Eyes to ears, important transition to understand this generation. So humor's a big deal. Another thing I would tell you is, and this is important, I didn't even get into how a quarter of the students really don't claim any religion at all. There's some really interesting polling coming out among Barna and among Gallup in terms of what they call the nuns. And I don't mean like habit-wearing Catholic nuns. I mean N-O-N-E-S, like they don't claim any religion whatsoever. So a little bit with Xers, we were a little bit hostile toward religion. We were anti-establishment. It's almost harder for you to reach millennials and Z because their attitude is not anti-church. They just don't care about it. It's apathy. And one of the issues you have to work through if you're going to reach millennials and Z is not that they're anti-church. They just think, oh, that's good for you. Mm-hmm. How sweet. Oh, that's neat that you like your church. And so inviting someone to church is like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. It's like getting invited, and listen, I don't know who, what clubs or what you belong to. To a millennial and a Z, going to church, if they're unchurched, going to church is kind of the equivalent of going to the Rotary Club or the Elks Lodge or whatever it is you do. It's like, oh, yeah, you're in Boy Scouts. That's great for you. I don't really want to join. I'm not interested. But that's great for you. You know, if so you've got a real uphill battle when it comes to reaching them because sometimes animosity or an adversarial relationship it can be easier to get over with than just absolute apathy and disconnect. So another thing, if you want to reach this generation, is engaging them at the level of disconnect. Especially why youth ministry matters so much in the church right now. Who did I tell you? If there's a number one group that speaks the life of a millennial, who is it? I told you this earlier. They love what? They love their parents. Okay? If you've got millennials in Generation Z and their parents are coming to your church, it is a critical time to reach them. Because if you cannot reach them there and you lose them, the disconnect of getting them back is beyond an uphill battle. There's no attitude of like, well, they'll go to church when they're older. Nope. They just don't even see the importance in it. They like Jesus. They think he's pretty neat. They think he's fascinating. And they're not even anti-church. They're not like the Xers were that thought church was bad. They just don't really care about it. You know, when I think about, you know, some of you guys that are millennials in here, if you're Generation Z, you probably think about some of your peers. It's not that they were anti that you went to church or anti that you were a Christian. It was more the attitude of, that's nice for you. That's really neat for you. I'm not really interested in that. It wasn't like, you know, yeah, we'll keep going. Yeah, I'll switch this over again.
Lisa, yeah. Said engage them in. We both got that and then we didn't get in.
Point of disconnect.
Oh, engage in the point of disconnect. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Sorry.
You've also got to engage this attitude. Oh, so how do you engage them if they're completely disconnected from church? One of the biggest mistakes that we're hearing from millennials and some of the study stuff that I'm reading is they don't like church light. Okay? Okay, let me back up here in a second. I'm gonna go all the way over to Pendant Swing. Boomers are heavy consumers. Hyper individualistic, they're building malls, and honestly with a boomer, the bigger the better. The bigger, the faster, the more powerful. And so they built big houses, big fast cars, I mean all of it. I mean they are a consumer mentality. Here's how that impacted the church. It really was a build it, they'll come attitude. If you, and not true of every church, I think of one particular one in town where I used to do ministry in Tulsa that struggled from this, but a lot of times, if you could build a big enough church with a nice enough stage, with boomers, they'll come. Mm-hmm. And if you were the church that couldn't keep up financially, and you couldn't put together all the special stuff, boomers, they were church shoppers, man. They'd move on. They'll go to the nicer church in town, and they're gone. Whereas traditionalists, good night, they'll stay at that church so they die. There's a cemetery out back, but they'll be there. You know, boomers are like, well, they go to this church, and like, we've been to this church for a year, and they'll move on to the next one. Mm-hmm. So with Xers, it was this shift that happened. The shift that happened with them that said, man, like, there's not really much of an attachment. And so what you get with millennials and Z is, they're not consumer-minded when it comes to church. Mm-hmm. They're not church shopping. They want to find out one thing, do you have anything of substance to offer me? Interesting thing about how many millennials and Generation Z are going to liturgical churches. The upswing among liturgical churches for millennials and Z is skyrocketing. They want depth. They crave it. And as long as we're still building a boomer-type church for millennials and Z, you're going to lose them. Honestly, the craziest thing for me is, a lot of times when I teach, the deeper I go, the more they dig it. The more kids come up and ask me questions. Boomers grew up almost going through a Dr. Phil and Oprah-type theology. It really was very sociologically minded. It was 5 steps to better you, how you can overcome this in your life, all those kind of things. You've got students over here, the millennials and Z, that they don't want what I call BuzzFeed Christianity. They don't want that. Some of you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. Others are like, what does he mean by that? Look it up, you'll find out. They don't want BuzzFeed theology. They don't want, when it comes to their lives and being transformed, they don't like it shallow. They see it right through. So from the songs you pick to sing, if it sounds like you can sing the song and slow dance with Jesus at the same time, don't sing it. I call those Jesus prom songs. Can't stand it. If it sounds existential or narcissistic, don't sing it. They would rather sing something with depth and content. I mean, even the whole phraseology. Let's go back. I'm not trying to pick on boomers. Phraseology. I said they're hyper-individualistic. Yep. I got 2 minutes. I got hurt. I thought I had 12:30. 12:15. 2:15. They sing songs. Traditionalists sing, "A mighty fortress is our God." Okay? Remember those old great songs? Yeah, great song. All of a sudden, the movement in the music and the way it affected a boomer transformed them. All of a sudden, it becomes about a personal relationship with Lord and Jesus. You know, my personal relationship. And you really start diving into Scripture that's kind of like, there's some theological issues with calling Him your personal Lord and Savior, because in the book of Acts 2:42, it really was a community mindset. If you want to reach millennials and Z, build a community-based mindset toward church. Move away from the phraseology of my personal Lord and Jesus, you know, and deal with a personal. That's a boomer-type theology. Go back to the book of Acts, if you want to reach millennials and Z, and talk about the community of the church. Talk about the way we come together as a brotherhood. And I'm out of time. There's a lot of good stuff I can give you. I'll hang out if you want to talk after Kurt. I got blasted you and didn't get to a fourth of my notes. Hope we get a couple of nuggets out of there that were worthwhile. Generational IQ.
Okay.
Good book to read. Generational IQ, Hayden Shaw. Read that book.
Say that again.
Generational IQ, guy named Hayden Shaw. I think that's his name. Pretty sure. Generational IQ.
I know there's some good resources and things for folks on the CIY website.
Yep.
So let me make sure, CIY.com.
Yep.
And resources there that they can use at their churches, as well as information about the kind of events and projects.
Yeah, on the other side, I'll give one soundbite. We are bridesmaids, never the bride. All we do is try to do things that serve the bride of Christ. Nothing we do is to pull kids to us. Everything we do is to push kids to love their church. We are bridesmaids, never the bride.
Amen. Thank you. So.
Thank you.